182 run target, which is well improbable on most days and on most pitches, unlike this one in the second test at Chennai. Ravichandran Ashwin just scaling new peaks on this third day of the second test match between India and England. Hello and welcome to Hotspot Daily with me, Chetan Narula, and my friend in London, Daniel Norcross. Daniel, first up to you. Ashwin, his day. I mean, yes, most of the days we speak about him when he's finished taking five wicket hauls, which we did 24 hours ago as well. Five wicket haul, 29th five wicket haul. But now he's topped it up with a test century, just twice behind Sir Ian Botham, one of those all-time great all-rounders this game has seen.
It was a terrific knock, wasn't it? People will say, well, the pressure was a bit off and the game was probably already won when he came out to bat. But that's not really the point. We're in a series and he's laid down a marker. He's kept England's bowlers out there and he's batted really, really well. The other thing he's done, of course, is he's proved that there's not too much wrong with a pitch when the number eight can score a century. He is a great all-rounder. He and Ravindra Jadeja between them have given terrific balance to India's attack, both with a bat and with a ball in India. And he's proved it once again today. It was superb.
It was interesting that you mentioned Jadeja there because cricketers now have that bit of a longevity about their careers, especially if they can pick and choose formats. I know Jadeja probably might choose the wide ball formats a bit more, but if he does choose the red ball at some point, he's superbly fit, probably can play all three formats for the next 5 years. But at some point, if he does choose the long format over the shorter format, and we know Ashwin is now only restricted to one format, which probably has also lengthened his test career because T20s and ODIs have their own demands. But given the number of wickets they are picking and given the their dominating nature, this could be a huge partnership for India over the next, say, 3 to 5 years, maybe. And that longevity question, it's almost like what Stuart Broad and James Anderson are doing for England, isn't it? I mean, this could become a spin pairing for the ages.
To me, it's very analogous to Anderson and Broad. Ashwin is getting an elongated career because he's sticking to test cricket just the same way as Jimmy Anderson did. And it could also happen to Jadeja. I think with Jadeja, he's so much more effective with the white ball than either Anderson and Broad really were, both with bat ball and crucially in the field, that he's unlikely, you would think, to stick to just test cricket in the short term. You don't know, though. And given that India play half of their matches, obviously at home, on pitches that suit spin, just as England play half their matches on pitches that suit seamers, it's very, very similar, isn't it? You could see them bagging 550, 600 wickets, and with the runs to boot, they could end up, you know, being among the finest all-rounders the game has ever seen.
And you look at Ashwin, he's obviously closing in on 400 wickets. So he's obviously in that legacy or in that league of bowlers. You look at Broad, 500, Anderson, 600 plus. So Jadeja still has a bit of way to go, but you don't put it past him. So again...
But are they motivated to do it, Chetan? See, that is the key. I think with Ashwin, we know the answer, definitely.
Yeah.
With Jadeja, we'd need to know the motivation. We'd also need... I think he would need to get the backing of his team management. He's been in and out of the team a bit more often. What's really noticeable about Anderson and Broad is that they want to keep going. You can see it in the way they train, the way they play. It's that desire to do it. And I would love to see them both do it because, you know, who wants to stop seeing Jadeja and Ashwin?
No, absolutely. I think that's a very, very valid point that you make because Indian selection obviously works in a very, very different manner to English selection. The big question, as we mentioned earlier as well, that the big question is if it comes to Jadeja picking formats, which formats will he pick? And absolutely, because he is an absolute firecracker with the white ball cricket, isn't he? With his fielding and his batting skills, which are even more enhanced now over the last 2-3 years. It's interesting that you put in the desire word, because when the desire word is there, you also need to work on your fitness to a certain extent. Perhaps the demands for spinners is a bit different than fast bowlers. I don't know. After all, they're all test cricketers. But again, at some point, that desire will come into question for both Ashwin and Jadeja if that's a big if, they have that longevity.
Yeah, and it's not just about the on-field play. It's the traveling around the world.
Yeah,
it's going to hotels. It's what have you. If you have families, then you know there comes a point in someone's life in their mid-30s when they start to wonder, do I really want to go?
Yeah.
I know it sounds mad, but do I really want to go to the Caribbean again? I've done it 3 times before. What more have I got to prove? So that's just about temperament. It's about the type of person you are. And I can't speak to that because I don't know them well enough. But
yeah,
if they've got that, there's nothing that would stop them.
Let's be honest. Both have young families. And I think this is a question for much later. And at some point, Jadeja will come back. And I do want to mention in terms of talking about, you know, you said that Jadeja has been in and out of the team. That mostly happens when they travel overseas. Again, if you do see the analogy, Broad and Anderson, now they're playing overseas or even home tests alternately. So you never know. You never know. But yeah. That's a very exciting prospect for India. But let's come back to this test match and how it's progressed on day 3. Daniel, what did you feel in the morning session? India had those flurry of wickets. They lost something like 4 for 31. Yes, we've already discussed England are not coming back in this game or not winning in this game, but you almost felt like, you know, what if India get all out for 100 here? Will England have made a point?
Yes, I did wonder that. I mean, my view of the whole day is that we got to exactly where I expected us to get to at the start of the day, but we went by a different route. So I was entirely expecting India to get to pretty much the total they got, but you know, England had a really good morning when the ball was a little bit harder, definitely. They got more purchase off the pitch. The spinners bowled better this time. Moeen bowled better than he did in the first innings. I'd expect that, really, because he hadn't played much for such a long time. And the big plus for England was, of course, Ben Folkes. Everyone was purring over his keeping. Kieran Morey wrote a tweet describing the technique. And it was wonderful, wonderful to watch. And for England, it is important in a game you're going to lose to lay down some markers for the rest of the series. So for Moeen to get the better of a couple of batsmen, for Leach to do the same thing. I mean, one thing on Leach, he's become only the fourth man to take 4+ wickets in an innings in 5 consecutive second innings in test matches. And the others are, I think, Mushtaq Ahmed, Murali and Shane Warne.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not for 1 minute putting him in that category, but he's at the start of his career. And that's helpful for England going forward and for the next 2 tests. I thought it was a little frenetic from India in the morning. I know they've been really positive and I'm not going to criticise that style because it's worked, certainly in this game. But it played into England's hands a little bit. But then Kohli came back superbly. I mean, one thing I would say is that I'm a bit confused by the reaction to Kohli's innings, because the same people who were saying there's nothing wrong with the pitch were saying that was an absolutely brilliant innings. Now, you can't sort of have both, because a 62, it's a brilliant innings because it was a difficult pitch. I think we can acknowledge that it was a difficult pitch. It's just, it's perfectly reasonable that it was a difficult pitch. And by the time Kohli and Ashwin had got that partnership going, England's bowlers were getting less from it. The ball had gone softer. They capitalised, they ground England into the dirt. And really, it was actually the last wicket partnership when you've sort of felt the wheels have now come off for England. They'd battled so hard in a losing cause. And then Siraj pumps the ball into the stands.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Ashwin gets to his 100.
That was a marvelous last wicket partnership, full of energy from the... Yes, the English fielders didn't have that energy, but the Chennai crowd, and you see that, I mean, after a year, the crowd's coming back to the ground and a hometown hero comes in, scores 100. And then you add certain context to it when Mohammad Siraj, you know, needs to bat a few. It was every ball. We were watching on television in our studios at All India Radio and every ball was being cheered on. And of course, they do turn up the stump mics on when, you know, whenever India is playing at home. But at the same time, you could just discern the way the crowds were behaving with every ball being cheered on, Siraj with the ducks and that 6, and of course his celebration when Ashwin got the 100. So it was quite interesting to see. And of course, the English shoulders were drooping at that time. But 2 points that you raised, first of all, obviously Virat Kohli, sensational. I think he showed the way that you can bat on this wicket, which is a bit alternative to, say, Rohit Sharma, or even Ashwin, because Ashwin, when he came to the crease, he started attacking a bit. He raced to 30 odd of 34 balls or something like that. And we've seen over the past 4 or 5 test matches, he's actually been 3 runs of 50 balls and 5-0, you know, not 1-5, 3 of 50 balls. He's played that stopping game and the waiting game at the crease. And today he just came out and he started attacking. The fact that India batted said a lot about Virat's personality. They wanted to make a point. And the way he came to the crease, he was playing closer to the body. He did not hit a cover drive for the first 20 balls to make a point that I don't get out this way. And that was an absolutely magnificent innings. Deserved 100. This is the next big debate of Indian cricket. When is Virat Kohli going to get another 100? But we will leave it for another time. What I want to ask you now, because I've been rambling on for a bit, is the Ben Folkes question. You made a really good point that he came in. This is his first test in India. This is his first visit to India.
Yeah.
And he was excellent behind the stumps. Now it puts another scanner on the English rotation policy. Josh Butler's gone home. He's not going to play another test until the summer. Johnny Bairstow is in the squad. He is not England's first choice test keeper anymore. Yeah?
No, he's not. No,
but what happens here? What happens here? Yeah.
Well, this is a conundrum, and it's always a conundrum when you've got choices, isn't it? A lot of people, and I'm in
and,
this
and let camp, me let me just believe... just let me just ask one more thing here before you go on. England have 2 mega test series this year. There's also the T20 World Cup, etc. Let's just forget the limited overs for a bit. England have 2 mega test series this year. India coming in the summer, and then you have the Ashes at the end of the year. So how does it fit into this whole scenario with Bairstow, Butler and Folkes?
Well, I think Bairstow is slightly a red herring because Bairstow is really a batter now. Yeah. That's really where he's at because Butler's keeping has come on so well and they want to use him. So, I mean, he might come back into it if there was a loss of form or injury, but we see him as a batter. So then you come down to the, do you play Butler and Folkes? The issue was that because England had gone with the top 3 of Burns, Sibley, Crawley, that had been the sort of the latest thinking through the summer in England, then you couldn't fit Butler and Folkes in. So they went with Butler because they prized his batting and his ability to turn a game, which I understood. In India, I always thought that it wasn't really going to be a big miss for England for Butler to go home after one test because I thought Folkes' keeping would be crucial. And it has proved to be. And his batting in Indian conditions, what's required for England, it's not really necessarily that it has to be Butler. It could be Butler, could be Folkes. I don't think the team loses from that. I can see that if you were to pick England's best team right now, you would probably have Butler and Folkes. Butler batting at 6 as a specialist batter, where he averages 50 in Test cricket. Folkes at 7. Pope up the order to number 3. Root 4. And Stokes at 5, which would mean that Dan Lawrence would miss out. But objectively, Ollie Pope is further advanced both in his test career and in his first class career. He's got better numbers than Dan Lawrence. So it would strengthen the batting, in my view, if that was England's top 7. So as for the future, how that pans out, England are blessed by having Stokes because they've got that all-round bowling option. So they can still afford to play Butler, Folkes 6-7 and then pick 4 bowlers from 8 to 11 with Stokes as a seam bowling all-rounder, which will work both in England and in Australia. Whether they go that route, they haven't done it for 2 years, have they? Even though Folkes came in, got a man of the match performance. One of the only men in the history of cricket to have got a man of the match on his debut in Tests and a man of the match on his debut in ODIs and then get dropped from both. So, look, it's a conundrum, but my view is that you play them both.
It'll be interesting to see how England go ahead, not just this series, but also this summer and also later in the year. But now we come to the last bit of the podcast, which was the last session, last 45 minutes to an hour of play where England lost 3 wickets. A couple of talking points there. Obviously, you had Rory Burns and Dominic Sibley and Daniel Lawrence, the top order. The opener's gone back and the night watchman, he went back as well, lasting just 1 ball. I thought England never used, they had stopped using night watchman. Or am I wrong there? And because a ball later you have Joe Root.
Yeah, well, they have used Night Watchman. I mean, Jack Leach actually got 90 as a Night Watchman against Ireland, strangely. They used him as a Night Watchman opener, which was extraordinary. So I think they had an over to negotiate at the end of the day, and they sent Jack Leach out.
Now, come on, Dan. Come on, Daniel. You can't use the test match against Ireland as the marker for this pitch in Chennai.
Well, you sort of can, because if their thinking is, you know, we're not even going to risk an opening batsman against Ireland, then they're not going to risk Joe Root if they can avoid it against India. And, you know, he'd been capped in the field of play for a long time. I personally am always baffled by the Night Watchman. I think Steve Waugh had it right, and that Australian side, I don't think you use Night Watchman unless you've got a really obvious candidate. I mean, you might argue that Ashwin would make a great Night Watchman because he's a proper batsman.
He's a proper batsman.
I get that. You know, Chris Wokes, if he was playing for England, would make a perfect Night Watchman because it doesn't change really the makeup of your side. I think we saw what's wrong with a Night Watchman today. He goes out, gets out first ball. On England's batting, though, I've got to say, I was pleased they ended up three down. They're going to lose a game. But they've adapted their approach. Dom Sibley, not so much. He got out in the way he was getting out in Sri Lanka. I mean, actually just missed one that he should have hit. It's good bowling from Patel. He pushed it through quicker, 93 kilometres an hour.
Yeah.
But, you know, Sibley's just missed that, which is batsman error. With Burns, it was really noticeable how he was using his feet. He's trying to, in a way, copy the Indian approach, get closer to the pitch of the ball. And it was when he didn't do that he got out. It was when he actually reverted to sort of coming forward and then turning the bat face that he got the edge and it flew through. And of course, then the big talking point at the end of the day, how the umpire didn't give out Joe Root. I mean, the naked eye, that's out, you know.
There have been other instances in the series. Look at Ajinkya Rahane's non-dismissal against Anderson. Obviously, he was bowled immediately after, but that was an LBW shout that you could have turned around. But I'll tell you, I like the umpire's call. People are mostly against the umpire's call. I like it because it retains the human element to the game. Otherwise, the game becomes too mechanic. The umpiring element has always been sacrosanct in cricket. There's always been a place for the umpires. Their decisions, their calls, they have an impact on the game, whether for right or for wrong. And you want to retain that. I've always liked the umpire's call because even in a DRS technological world, the umpire's call retains the human element. However,
well, I'm going to say something to you that may sound crazy.
Yeah.
And you may say it's inconsistent. But to me, I agree with you about where the ball is hitting the stump.
Yeah.
It's got further to travel. And I think there's an element of doubt, and that's all fine. I get more irritated by the impact on umpire's call.
Yeah.
Because partly because I already think that the law is silly. Because I already think that actually it's very confusing to the non-cricket watcher. Why does it matter if the impact is outside? But when it's like half the ball is already there, I'm afraid that's just out. You know, it's hard enough for the bowler to get somewhere.
Exactly.
As it is. And to the naked eye, it was out. The biggest surprise to me was that he just didn't give it out on the field, to be honest.
Yeah, absolutely. So, they checked for the edge there and then they went for the LBW and the direction of the ball and everything. But you can tell. Why not reverse it in the TV umpire's room and give that authority? I mean, how are you going to explain 5 years down the line, you're trying to educate a kid about the LBW rule in cricket, and hopefully there are kids who want to be educated about cricket five years down the line. How are you going to educate a kid and say, look, that's technology in cricket, but that is not out when it should be out? How can you explain that? So my question here is, you retain the human element of the umpire's call, but you have to find a way to probably give the TV umpire some right or some judgmental call to be able to overturn decisions like this, where it has to be given out. Well, it is out.
Well, I tell you, Chetan, I tell you the answer to it, and it's very simple. It's because the impact is an actually recorded event.
Yeah.
So much like Hawkeye in tennis, you know, the ball does land where it lands.
Yeah.
And similarly, the ball hits the pad where it hits the pad.
Yeah.
It's the bit after that is predictive.
Yeah.
So that's why you keep the umpire's call for it hitting the stumps.
Yeah.
Because actually the technology's got to predict the last bit.
Yeah.
Whereas the first bit is an incontrovertible event that was finite and happened in time.
Yeah.
So to me, there isn't an umpire's call on impact. It either was in line or it wasn't in line.
Exactly.
There's no half ball. There's none of that nonsense. And
yeah,
and
I mean,
and that's where you don't get these, you know.
Yeah, so the umpire's call cannot be yellow. It has to be either it's hitting or it's not hitting. It has to be black and white. It cannot be gray.
Certainly for an impact, because as I say,
yeah, for the impact, occurs. Yes. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
For the impact alone, I'm talking about it cannot be gray. What is not gray at all is the impending impending outcome of this test match. There's quite a long way to go. 429 runs. Yes, miracles have happened. Yes, England have Joe Root. Yes, England have Ben Stokes. Daniel Norcross is shaking his head on the Zoom recording, and I agree with him. There have been miracles, but there's not going to be a miracle in this game. Ashwin will be rested. He'll be coming back. And tomorrow, we'll be talking about how India wrapped up test match. Oh, yes. So with that, that brings us to the end of this episode. Thanks once again for joining us. Hope to have your company tomorrow again. Goodbye.